Attention contractors, on October 8th, I'm going to be hosting a live roundtable on one cash flow killer that nobody ever really talks about. Poor communication. Because every time your crew slips up, or a client email gets buried, or a change order goes MIA, your profits disappear down the drain. And at this specific time of year, the problem can be somewhat fatal. Tight cash flows, worn out crews, demanding clients, you get it, the list goes on. The solution for sophisticated contractors is to stop blaming crews and clients and lean into the one simple communication system that changes everything. On October 8th, I'm going to be bringing together CompanyCam CEO Luke Hansen and two of our highest performing contractors who have mastered communications at all levels. Together, we're going to show you how to reduce some chaos, increase trust, and protect your margins, all without adding more work to your plate. So register in the link in the description before space runs out, and I'll see you there. Hey everyone, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. Today's guest is living proof that you don't need fancy gear or a media team to build a killer online brand. Just some drywall dust and a camera. Ben DeGross is a carpenter, drywaller, and creator of Vancouver Carpenter, a YouTube channel that's grown to over 700,000 subscribers with simple, value-packed videos shot right on the job site. But here's the twist. Before drywall, Ben was a full-time skater, even running a skateboard YouTube channel. Now he's blending his trade skill with his content creation skill and building a massive outreach while still running a small contracting operation. While recording this one in studio, we got to dig into how contractors can build trust, brand, and community, all with a phone and a few smart habits. So let's dive in with Ben. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Ben, welcome to Contractor Evolution. Stoked to have you, man.
Thank you for having me.
You don't live far from us, do you? You live down the road? You live in Vancouver somewhere?
Yeah, I'll keep that to myself, but I am in the Vancouver area.
All right, so we can't come knocking on your door?
You can. I keep it a little bit private. Vancouver is general enough.
All right. Perfect. We're stoked to have you, man. So for those who don't know, you're a YouTuber. You're also a contractor. You do drywall primarily videos, I assume, from what I've seen. You have 700,000 subscribers at this point on YouTube.
Yep.
Blows my mind. I would love to know how this even got started, because you started in skateboarding, did you not? Maybe give us a background. Like, how did you start to mix contracting with YouTube and find a niche in all this?
Yeah, I remember it exactly, which is good. But I was driving around one day, listening to the radio, and they were talking about YouTubers on the radio. And they're saying, hey, a lot of people are actually starting to make a living on YouTube. And I'm like, right. The place where you go to figure out like how to fix some random thing on your car or watch cat videos. People are making a living. You almost didn't believe it, right? And this was about 8 years ago. But it just really got me thinking, because as a contractor and having four kids, it's really hard to actually get by just on a contractor's income. Especially like I mostly subcontract to other contractors. So there's like really a limit to how much you can make in that field. I think I was doing some kitchens and small jobs as well, but even still, there's like kind of a ceiling as to what you can actually charge, especially working by yourself, which I primarily have. So it really was about generating more income to try and survive in this like highly unaffordable city.
And you had a channel before this, did you not, in skateboarding, which has done good. I think you guys have 100,000 subscribers on it right now.
Done as well as it can due to the limiting factors. And there's a lot of those, but
why do you think something as simple as drywalling has 7x'd your skateboarding channel?
Like it's very simple. It's like really easy to understand. It's because there's a much greater demand. You know, how many people actually want to know about skateboarding? It's very small. Right. And that fluctuates as it goes in and out of popularity. It's actually in a very low ebb of popularity right now. But people always need to fix holes in the walls. And it's also difficult information to find on YouTube, to find really good information. There's a lot of information and most of it's really bad. So when people were able to find something that they could apply, right? So somebody that's able to speak well enough to articulate the information and knows it in depth enough to be able to relay that information, all of a sudden they find something they can use. And if you continually put out stuff that's a little bit better, a little bit more in depth, people, you know, they keep growing their information. And it also has kind of a meditative aspect to it as well. I remember as an apprentice carpenter, whenever the drywallers were on site, I would just watch them. I mean, I'd be working, but like, I just watching them apply the stuff, I was like, how do they do that? You know, it looks so smooth and in so few movements. I was like, I was always kind of entranced by watching it. And so I think that's also why I wanted to learn it, because my background is carpentry and I still do a lot of carpentry, at least 50%. I just don't film it very often. But yeah, I was just interested in getting into it. And over the years I did, and a lot of it was through online. I would learn online. But getting back to your question a little bit, there is a meditative aspect to watching it. So people originally come to learn how to fix a hole in their wall or how to get through a reno, like save some money, and because they've maybe had some horror stories with other drywallers, or they just want to learn how to do it themselves again to save money. And they find the videos empowering. So they start there, and then a connection usually forms, right? And then they just come back to keep watching me do my thing.
They subscribe and watch you do drywalling. It's like watching paint dry, but somehow people love it.
It's a little more dynamic than that.
Well, what's interesting about this, the first thing you even said to this is like the market is bigger than it is in skateboarding. And the numbers are obviously proving that. And I think we've talked about this in past episodes as well, where, you know, our contractors are like, I'm a plumber. Like I'm a landscaper. I'm like, what use is my content? Like, this boring, but not necessarily true. Like, the total addressable market is much larger. And there is something to the content that you're putting out that has people continuing to come back.
So it's a compounding factor when you talk about the skateboard versus the construction one. So not only does it get 10 times more views, it is also at least twice as lucrative in the advertising revenue, because skateboarders are typically broke and the advertisers know it. So they don't spend too much time, you know, marketing anything other than probably like energy drinks or something.
Interesting.
You know, whereas homeowners have money, they have spending power. So you earn more per, I don't know what you would say, per click or just per view of a ad.
Okay. So there's more, yeah, the audience itself has more money. So that's the advertisers will put back more behind as well. So there's actually
they're more willing to spend money on ads on that channel.
So I know that you went, and just so everyone listening, you went the route of being a professional YouTuber, correct? Like, you're not a professional, like you're a good contractor, but you don't have 20 staff. This isn't.
No, I've tried to have staff in the past, and it's always been I'm really picky, and it's very hard for me to find someone who's on board with how picky I am, because I think a lot of people, they take my criticism personally when I'm saying like, no, it's just that this isn't good enough for me to pass on to my customer yet, and we need to make it better. But they're like, I'm not good enough. And so that's been my experience with some employees. But it's more complicated than that. That's one challenge in finding an employee. And the second thing is, in order to have an employee, especially in the early stages, like, it takes a long time for your employees to actually start earning you money and building your business. In the beginning, in order to keep an employee busy for 8 hours a day, you're going to be busy an absolute minimum of 1 hour before and after them. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really hard to get through those growing pains, and I never did.
Hey guys, quick question before we continue the episode. If you could get a custom roadmap for growing your business in 5 minutes, would it be worth your time? After tracking the growth of over 1,600 contracting businesses since 2015, we've put together a 5-minute quiz you can go take right now that draws on a massive pool of data. You'll get instant access to a personalized report that's going to tell you which one of the four phases of contractor growth you're actually in right now. How your company stacks up in the 6 core areas of business compared with industry benchmarks. And what to go do next, including customized resources, tools, and templates you'll have access to right away. No waiting around for an email or filling out a million separate forms. The link is in the description, so go check it out. Now, back to the episode. I also think you were mentioning this when we were getting ready here, but like, there is an element of, to go as professional as you have on YouTube, there is a art to this. Like, you can't just run production and get this much film going out the door. And when I watch actually some people who are professional influencers, and then people who also try and mix that with running a large corporate or a large contracting business, it's tough to have both.
Yeah,
you do have to at some point kind of choose between one or the other. But what I wanted to do today is I wanted to get into what you've learned from this, because I think
Not everybody listening needs to go have a YouTube channel with 700,000 people. But I think if they had something where their customer could see them, could view them, could be reminded of who they are, and they can bring value to the marketplace, it would be a massive asset for any organization. And just around this, like, do you recommend people try and grow a channel while trying to run a business? And how do you balance both? How do you even balance both in what you do?
Balancing both is the biggest problem I have these days. Because in order to film the videos, I have to work, but I have to film the projects because the jobs take priority. You know, a customer's job takes priority over filming videos. So then I usually try and take some time off and start producing the videos. So that's where I've really been struggling is ramping up and finding people to film and edit and actually do that work so that I can continue with other things.
How many hours a week are you putting into this YouTube channel, you think?
Not enough.
Which is also crazy because, you know, we all know Matt Reisinger has a massive team behind him. And, you know, you're not quite there, but you're not far behind. You've done quite a bit with what you have done.
So ideally, I would put out at least a video a week steadily. That would be my bare minimum if I had somebody who was helping me do it. But what tends to happen is I'll put out one a week, I'll maybe even schedule some, but inevitably I get too busy and I lose the momentum. And I also don't like being in front of a computer. I'm not an editor. Like, I have no background in video. And in the beginning, I think it didn't matter as much, but moving forward and where we're at now with YouTube, I think you can't really get away with the lower production value that you could in the beginning. In the beginning, it was shooting fish in a barrel. Just like, what are the tips that helped me, the things that helped me do a good job, make a video about it. And it didn't really matter how long the video was. It didn't really matter how well cut up it was to keep people's engagement. In the beginning, it was actually quite easy. There was very little competition.
And so what has changed?
Well, what's changed is the industry has just grown up around it. So now you've got a lot of people and they're putting all their time and energy into YouTube and they're producing quite watchable videos. And even if the content of the video is actually somewhat vacant, they're doing a really good job of making videos that keep people engaged, you know, like cut, 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 talking, 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 talking. And I actually kind of call that snake charming, right? Like, I think a lot of, I'm not talking about people in the construction sphere specifically, YouTube in general, I think most of what YouTube is snake charming. And this is a lot of cuts, a lot of talking, and it's a trick to keep the young and simple-minded engaged. And you won't actually realize that you've just been watching vapid content for like 30 minutes.
Yeah, this happens to me all the time. This is how I end up just like doom scrolling.
And then all of a sudden you go like, what did I just do? What happened? Right? And it's just like somebody hacked you and then you want your time back. Yeah.
So given this, like I do want to talk a bit about building an audience. I want to talk a bit about like tactics and tricks and things that we can learn from you. In this, what are some things that a contractor right now with an active business could learn from your trials, your tribulations, your mistakes, your wins that would really help them say, hey, if I want to step into YouTube a little bit and do some of this, where do they start?
I think just starting is the best thing. So people's fear keep them out of it. And for anyone who wants to start and who is nervous of starting and you want a little inspiration, go to my skateboard channel, Ben DeGrow. Go all the way back to my very first video and watch that. It's only 3 minutes. You only need the first 30 seconds of it, but just watch how I interact with the camera. Like, I knew nothing. I had no experience in front of or behind a camera. I didn't know where to look. Like, looking at a camera freaked me out. And I didn't know who I was talking to. But I would say by the third video that I made, even though I really hadn't posted much and I didn't necessarily have an idea who the audience was, I started to get comfortable. So just get that first video done.
So phase one is don't worry about who's watching you. Get comfortable with you. Like, get yourself into your own shoes so you can just be you.
So first off, nobody is watching.
Right? Like, your five views is your mom and your grandma and your two kids. And
you can do pretty much whatever in that stage because nobody actually is watching. So just start. But the second thing, I don't know if you asked it, but I know we're going to get into it, is it worth it for a contractor to start putting out content of some kind? I would say yes. The challenge is getting it good enough that it actually resonates to some degree. And that's getting harder and harder as everyone's using more and more tactics to get people's attention. And it typically involves pretty outrageous things. Like everything we see that's coming to us on our feeds is pretty outrageous.
When you think about like what actually is attracting people, how do you even learn what viewers want? How do you start to understand what's working and what's
not? Well, they'll tell you.
Yeah.
They will absolutely tell you what they do and don't like. But you also can only put some stock in that, not everything, because the very negative people are often the most vocal. And so if you go entirely off what they say, well, you probably just like sit there in fetal position and not want to produce anything. But I think most of us know that there are people out there like that and they don't reflect the majority and it doesn't necessarily reflect what you've actually put out.
And so is it just comments? Like what is it that helps you understand what I'm going to produce in the next couple months? Or is it experience out in the field? How are you merging what you do with what people want?
So the first thing that I've always tried to do is I never put out anything that I wouldn't watch. I always, like, I'm a very utilitarian YouTube user. I typically try to avoid, you know, spending hours on there for entertainment purposes. I'm usually on there to like catch up with certain people, maybe in the skateboard side of things. I will occasionally watch construction related content if I have something I need to do that I don't know how to figure out yet. But so what I'm saying is I'm very utilitarian and I've noticed that I've attracted largely a utilitarian audience. So if there's not something that's really useful in every video, people aren't going to come back. So you need to give them those hard won tips that are really useful to you.
It's like practical, like I could actually watch this and then do something about it.
But there's many reasons that people come back to your videos. One is for the utilitarian tips. Another one is connection. They might just form a relationship with your personality and your style of content and just enjoy watching it, want to keep coming back. So that's more of an entertainment or even just kind of like a companionship in a pretty busy, lonely world. And that's okay too. So, but I always keep in mind, like, is my video useful? Have I put out something? And entertainment and, you know, that sense of companionship is useful too. As long as people can get some companionship somewhere else too, you know, everybody's life is different.
We call it edutainment, right? Is that something along those terms?
Yeah, like education, yeah, edutainment, I've heard.
Education plus entertainment. Trying to merge the two. Mm-hmm. So how do you come up with a concept for that? Because if someone who's never done this before, how do you say, okay, I'm going to be educating them on, I think the education part almost for a lot of contractors might be the simple part because it's like, here's all the things that I know that I could teach. And I will say, you don't realize how many things you know until you break it down from like, we know how to do drywall to how to do mudding, but there's like subcategories within like 10 of them within each thing.
Well, there's the easiest way to start and that is the YouTube search bar.
Okay.
Right. How to, and then insert whatever field you have experience in. And that's going to tell you the most relevant searches. But also when you title your video that and when you put out yet another video based on those highly relevant searches, you're also going to be buried in with everything else.
Competing with everyone else.
500,000 how to patch a hole in drywall.
So how do you be different then?
Whew, that's a tough one. I mean, everybody is uniquely different. So there's that. Every single person has that going for them. But it's a combination of factors. So if we're talking about trying to grow a brand in YouTube, there are some things that it takes. And one of it is camera presence, and not everyone has it. And that's just, it's just the way it is.
It's brutally honest.
Yeah, it is what it is. Not everybody is easy to watch on camera. And, you know.
And that enough said.
Well, what do you,
we have probably a few thousand people that are going to watch this. How does somebody determine that? Is it just like, just put some stuff out, start to see what happens?
That depends on your level of narcissism. if you're highly narcissist, you will think that everything you put out is golden, right?
It's the best thing
ever. I don't know why nobody's watching this. This is amazing. I could watch this all day.
So at some level, you'll have to look at your data. You'll have to maybe do this for 6 months to a year, start to play around to see how people are reacting and start to see how is the time, effort, money, energy worth the return for my brand, for the people that recognize me?
Yeah. And so I want to touch a little bit more on that question. Is it worth it? I think it's absolutely worth trying. And I would say if you've put in consistent effort for a year and aren't getting any traction, like I actually had some rules for myself when I started. I told myself, okay, if I don't get any traction in a year, then I'm not going to keep going. But if I get traction within a year, then I'm going to put in another 2 years. But if I haven't reached this milestone in 2 years, then nope. Like, just I'll focus on something else. I'll try and grow my contracting business.
Go and move on.
Yeah.
Was there anything early on that you did that you kind of realized that was a bit of a light switch for you that went from just like, I'm just meandering here to I've actually got some direction?
Yeah. Let me briefly lay out just basically the journey. So I mentioned that I heard that ad on the radio, and then the skateboard channel was like, well, I'm interested in these like minute aspects of a skateboard and how these small measurements can make a big difference in how the board feels. And I knew that there was other people that would be interested in that. It's actually a pretty small percentage of people, but that's fine. I found them. But that channel was not growing very fast. Maybe within a year, I had reached about 1,000 subscribers, somewhere in that range, which isn't bad, but it was definitely not the results I was looking for. But I decided, so I'd been filming skateboard stuff for a year, and I decided to start the construction channel, and I kind of hit the ground running. So we're still talking about over 7 years ago. So I already knew how to edit, how to speak to the camera. Like, I had all these advantages from that experience. And then I filmed a whole series on this one job. One of my contractors let me film a bunch of drywall repair videos. And it was about 8 of them. I uploaded them in January, and I used my skateboard channel to leverage it. I was like, hey guys, I'm starting this other channel. Go check it out. And I got an initial about 100 views on every video.
Yep.
And then nothing. Crickets. Like, for, I think I kept checking it for about a month. And I was like, well, this is done. So I kept focusing on the skate channel. And then from January-ish to April, I largely ignored it. I did. Actually, I totally ignored it, because I then checked it out in that spring. And all of a sudden, I think I had like 10,000 subscribers. The videos had thousands of views. And I was like, whoa, this thing has legs.
You just left it alone and you didn't look at it.
Yeah.
So what happened?
Well, what happened was that people were actually finding the videos very useful. It was a lot of the basic, you know, how to tape drywall, how to tape flat joints, how to tape butt joints, how to install corner bead, how to coat butt joints. It was just all of your basics. It was really simply labeled. And again, in the early stages, it was like shooting fish in a barrel. I would just take those subjects and that I knew really well, and I put out the videos, and they were better edited than most. The information was more accessible than in most videos, because not everyone, again, this is one of the other things. So there's camera presence, but then like the camera might like you, but does the audience like what you say? So I was able to convey my information well, which I think part of the reason why there's been a soft spot in the drywall area of YouTube is like, how many drywallers have you worked with?
I know a lot of them that are probably on meth.
Okay. So there's a lot of stereotypes, but I just want to say there's a few things that have kept that information from being out there in a really presentable way.
Yeah.
One is that most drywallers are too busy.
Okay.
They're just way too busy. You know, they're always working weekends. They're always scrambling. Everyone's trying to get them to make up. Just, you know, you've had experience in the painting business. Same thing, right? The finishing trades are always getting rushed. So they're usually too busy. And second, loosely based around the stereotype that you mentioned, many drywallers are not the most presentable types, and they may not be able to share the information very well. So there's a lot of guys on YouTube that in the drywall space that, you know, they've done reasonably well, but I think the limiting factor is just that their videos aren't watchable enough and they don't share the information in an easily digestible way. So that stops them from gaining traction. But that was what I was able to do. It was a soft spot in that particular field.
So early on, is there anything else too where it's like, here's some stuff I've learned, somebody else is starting out, I made these mistakes, here's something you could do differently?
If you have the money or the resources, team up with a filmer editor right off the bat.
Yeah, so you are still doing your own editing, are you not?
I hate it.
It's crazy.
I'm not an editor. Like, I don't like being in front of a computer. I can only do like an hour at a time, and then I kind of go crazy and start getting distracted. And so when you say, how many hours do I put into my videos a week? Like, not enough.
Yeah.
Because it's not something that I am naturally inclined towards. Similar parallel would be, how many people get into construction and into the trades because they want to be a businessman and do paperwork and send emails and like not very many. And that's the limiting factor for a lot of contractors is that skill set doesn't come easily or naturally to them. And I'm the same that way too.
Interesting. Our audience is a little different and I can't speak for everyone in our audience, but if I look at who we target, it is the person looking to build a business actually. And so early on, how much time should they be giving somebody on the editing side? It's like, we're going to make a video a week. Are they subcontracting with somebody? What does this look like?
I have no idea because I haven't done enough of this myself, but like I would say, the videos don't earn a lot. So just to give you a sort of general idea, like a video that gets 20,000 views, it can vary depending on the year, depending on how much advertising is being spent. But a video that gets 20,000 views can get you between like $50 to $100.
Okay.
Like, so how much time can you afford to put into that?
Yeah. And it depends on the business. Like I think for some people here, it would just be to get the brand. Mm-hmm. They would say, hey, whether we get ad revenue or not, it's actually less about that. So they'll put in a little bit of time and money into it. And I know for us, like we have Juan here and we have, you know, Lauren setting things up. And so the business actually funds YouTube.
Yes. So I would say in the beginning stages, if you can afford to put a little more time and energy into the production, especially because it's become so competitive that you're going to have a hard time having lower production value.
Right.
So it's just too competitive.
This would be a team that helps you with doing the editing and the final, like, you know, tile creation for your video and get it out there basically ready to go.
Well, if you can afford that, but even at the very base level, if you know somebody who is a filmer and editor and they're willing to jump in and do a test run on this project, if somebody's planning on starting it, I think that's a good way to go too. And I just never had anybody at that time. I'm trying somebody out right now. I hope it goes well, but you know, everything, it's new. We've only filmed like 4 videos together. We haven't even started editing.
I still find it unreal that you have 700,000 subscribers and you've done this completely from your own laptop and your own brain. So
yeah. And it was by the skin of my teeth in the early stages when I was still working full time. I would just edit, you know, from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. every night, put in a little time. And it's sometimes that works okay, but the hardest part is picking your titles and thumbnails, and that takes a lot of time and energy and you can't force it.
Yeah.
So I have so many videos. I mean, I don't know how many videos I have, but I have at least 500, I think. And so many of those are underperforming because I was trying to stick to like a weekly, you know, like, okay, every Friday I got to upload something. And I'm just like barfing out a title and thumbnail because I'm like, I got to get this up. And it's a waste of time and energy if you neglect the title and thumbnail. They're the most important part.
You're like forcing the creative process for production, production capacity.
And I'm the kind of person that needs more free time to really be creative.
So how do you explain that to somebody? So what is the creative process and where does it feel like you get stuck and how do you work through that? And
well, I think one thing that would help actually would be collaboration of some kind, which I've lacked because I've done so much of it myself. When you have another person, you bounce ideas back and forth and you can come up with something better. So a lot of the most successful channels, like the ones I look up to in terms of their success, they have a team, or at the very least, it's a filmer, editor, and then YouTuber combo, right? And it's just, you could see it's a very collaborative process. They help each other out. And those are the ones that, I look at them and I'm like, man, I wish I had that. Like, I wish I had have done that earlier and put the time and energy. I've had a few just big failures trying to get that going. And it's discouraged me from working harder at it, just similar to my experience with employees.
So how do you do this then on your own? Because right now you are the creative process.
Still by the skin of my teeth.
Yeah.
I work. And then when I have finished a job, I take some time off and I try and produce stuff. And if I've been really busy, sometimes I don't even get to the video editing and all that stuff for like a week. Right. Because I'm just so burnt out that I just need to focus on other stuff. Usually when that happens, I'll put out a skateboard video or two, like just decompress and then start getting into the construction videos and then have to go back to work and realize I squandered my time.
This is an important lesson. As much as you're learning it, like I have seen this. When I look at influencers in our space that are also contractors to balance their business and balance being an influencer, it's a lot. And you at some point have to kind of choose between the two. And I think if I was to recommend anything that I've seen, it's just like, A, what you just recommended, which is have a bit of a team behind you. And it could be somebody probably 20 hours a week, I would imagine, helping with a lot of the like post-production process. And then making sure that you yourself, like you're not having to go run the business fully. So you have some probably, this is my advice to people, is like you have a sales, production, and an office admin person helping you already. So you're
is that in the contracting side?
On the contracting side, that would be like on their business side so that you can spend, what do you think, 15 hours a week on this? Something like that?
Yeah, that would be a reasonable amount to spend.
Yeah. So it's not a small investment in time.
But if you're making good money from it, like if I feel like it would warrant 30 hours of my time if I was able to make enough money from it without having to work in construction. Yeah. And the way this has worked for most people is it seems like most of the people that have done well in that area usually live in places with lower real estate prices because they're able to, that was always my plan, was to buy something. You know, we were living in a housing co-op with dirt cheap rent,
yeah,
like so cheap. And I was actually going to do that. But at the same time, we had four kids in this like very tiny 3-bedroom space with one bathroom. And, you know, they're becoming teenagers and it was just really difficult. So we did decide to, we were earning enough that we decided to move out and rent a house. And so that's been really good. But it also took away that money that I could have had to put into a property.
Right.
So I kind of hamstrung myself there in a way. But my family's done better because of it. So I don't think it was a mistake, but that's something that I have always, in honesty, been like a little envious of people who live places where they can more easily afford a project to buy. Because if I just had a little property that I could, you know, go and film some stuff at and then take some time off, there's no customer saying we need this done, I could just, you know, tinker away on that and film so many videos. So it really, it would be so much easier, but I haven't been able to reach that point because, and I'm not trying to sound all blamey and stuff, it just is what it is in the Vancouver area. You know, like the house we rent is valued at $4 million.
It's wild. Yeah, right? Most people like, in the United States don't understand.
Yeah, no, I don't think, and then yeah, you put on top of that, like all the inflation, all the, like, we don't need to get into all that, but it's crazy, like what our dollar is buying right now.
All that to say, essentially, to have a controlled environment to be able to deliver on content videos would be a hell of a lot easier than to have the chaos of just trying to find a customer with the right need that you can match with the right content idea to be able to deliver the right thing that gets the right views. Let's switch back
to
this.
That's still my goal.
I know.
It's still my goal.
Let's switch back to this because I want to stay on this idea of creating ideas, if that makes sense. So what is the process you go from like, this would be a good thing to film, to getting it filmed, to thinking of the right title, to the right thumbnail? Is just randomness? You're writing it on your Apple Notes as you're working through it the day? Like how does
There is some of that,
like,
for
just,
sure.
Just walk me through it because I think it's realistic for even how we do this here, but it's like realistic for how ideas come.
So I actually, part of the reason that I went back into work was not just because the YouTube money was slumping a little, but also because I was running out of ideas. I was becoming like one of those lame pampered YouTubers that's like trying to create content out of dumb stuff. You know, like, oh, maybe there's a squeaky hinge on my door at home. Like there's 5 million videos on that. Nobody cares, right? Like people want to know how to solve the difficult problems they come across. And I work in renovations primarily. So I'm always coming across things that are difficult to fix. And in the past, I would usually just like take a photo or a shot of something that looked really nasty and made you want to know like, well, how the heck does he fix that? And that worked for a long time, but I feel like it's gotten a bit harder.
Okay.
So at this point, it really is like, have I covered this before or have I not covered this for a while?
Right.
And I am at the point of recycling content to a degree. Yeah. It's still a different scenario in a different space. And I'm also still learning. That's another thing. Since going back on the tools, I'm still getting better. So, you know, like there's all these little tricks that I've learned just because I'm back on the tools. And I'm like, oh, well, I should find a way to share that. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, I look at it as it's not just for homeowners to get themselves through like their one basement reno. There's also thousands and thousands of people. Like I've read the comments so many times that like, hey, this is my job now. Like because of your videos, I got good enough at this that it's my job. I'm supporting my family off
Crazy.
This. So I see that it's not just about giving the bare basic info to homeowners. It's also about like, okay, what about these guys that have maybe been doing this 5 or 10 years that this new tip that I just learned could really help? So it's about continuing to learn myself. So I actually love being on the tools. Like, I see myself doing it until I physically can't. I don't think I'm necessarily going to be one of those people that retires as soon as they can. Like, I actually love building stuff. I love trying new materials. So as long as I have those opportunities, as long as it's viable, I'll film them and share them.
And for those listening, it sounds like in the beginning, it's all the little things. It's all the little things you see on site every single day.
The low-hanging fruit.
And then you'll, after, how many years have you been doing this now?
Seven.
7 years of filming how to do drywall.
How many times can I regurgitate how to tape an inside corner?
You might eventually run out of ideas, which is fair. And now you're thinking through how long it's been and how to reframe.
And I'm getting to the point where I could even redo all my basics again.
Yeah.
Because with better production value and more in-depth knowledge, I can do it better.
Yeah.
So it's not like there's no point in redoing content, but you just got to pick and choose what's worth it.
Totally. That makes sense. Okay. Now let's talk a bit about like concepts. So there's like how-to videos. There's the one you showed me where there was kind of like a risky one.
How would we troll video?
Stir in the pot. Like, what are the different types of videos you can put out there and how do they perform and what have you learned from those types?
Yeah. I keep coming back to the how-tos because that's what people typically want and will click on. And that's because that's the audience that I've gained. So when you try and venture out too far, like when I've tried to do vlog type stuff, a certain amount will watch it, but most people don't care. They just want the goods. They want to know how to do stuff. And I always just try and pepper a lot of humor and just really good information throughout the whole thing to keep them, you know, like they know, oh, there might actually be something really good at the end. If I don't watch it, I'll miss it. And so I try to make sure and not in that like lame YouTubery way where I'm like, stay to the end because there's this one last thing that's so great. It's more in the like, I want them to know that there's going to be these Easter eggs throughout the video. I want to not have to say it too. I want them to just know that like, I can trust Ben to put out a video that has good information through the entire thing.
So good info, how to's is what you're sticking to. That seems to be the winner.
Yeah, for now.
For now. And then you showed me this one where you were basically kicking drywall to like, you're like, this is how you, what was it? Like, this is how you make a round
Let's
corner.
Let's go over that really quick.
Let's go over that.
Yeah. So how that started was I was drywalling a job for the contractor that I do a lot of work for. And we're really good friends too. We're also like the kind of people that would have been separated in class at school. Like we would have stirred the pot a lot in school. And now we work together. So I think actually a lot of people in contracting can have that personality.
Yep.
But anyways, we didn't have anything that would bend around this little radius for a seat in a shower. And I thought, you know what? Maybe I can actually get Dent Shield to bend. Maybe I can bend it if it's in thinner strips instead of like a full 2 foot piece. And so I just started trying, and this was off camera. I just started trying like, and then it broke when I tried to get it onto the stud. And I don't know, I just thought it was kind of dumb, but entertaining. So I tried one more time, it broke again. And I send the photo to the contractor and I'm like, don't worry, you don't need to bring anything. I figured it out. Just to see if he'd buy it, right? To which he responded, you know, he goes, lol, YouTube short, how to bend drywall and then just kick it. So it was actually his idea based on what off. And then, so we filmed it the next day.
But let me be clear, the title says how to bend drywall.
Yeah. And there's no bending.
And it doesn't say that this is like, it's just like, and then it's just you busting this thing
it's
with your
foot.
It's
a full troll. we were only planning on just doing that first strip, but like, I just started rolling with it and I was like, I kept a straight face and I peppered it with layers and layers of like some real information, some disinformation, the whole thing is actually, if you know anything about the trades and you actually understand that it's a joke, you'll realize that it's like, it's pretty well crafted. There's like so much stuff in there. Even something as simple as like, oh, what's the best mud to use? Taping mud. Right. But you don't use taping mud with mesh tape and you definitely wouldn't use taping mud in a shower. So the whole thing has like these bits of half truths. So
I want to talk about this. So the pros and cons of doing that.
Yeah.
Right. And like, and when to, when not to, what have you learned from doing like just more like videos that stir the pot?
I was sweating bullets the next day and it was getting a lot of traction and like 50% of people couldn't figure it out. which was amazing to me because I thought as soon as you see somebody kick it, you have to know this isn't real.
Yeah.
But I think people are just that willing to believe that their fellow human is that dumb. That's it taught me a lot about humanity.
Did it perform well? Did you, do you regret doing it?
So 5 million views on Instagram in 5 days. Wow. It was getting a million a day. And on YouTube, it's still climbing. It's up to like, it's close to 400,000, not quite. And I'd say about 50% of the viewers know it's real. 50% can't figure it out. You've got a small percentage that was like, that was stupid. You wasted my time. They know it's fake, but they're just like offended. But I would say most people actually thought it was really funny. And they were like, thank you. I needed that, you know, because maybe they're having a stressful day. But what I noticed about it was at first I was nervous because I was like, geez, I feel like I could tank myself putting out content like this because it's doing so much better than all my other stuff. People won't know that I actually do good work too. So I was worried at first and I almost thought, well, should I take it down? And I'm like, well, if I take it down, then they'll definitely think it was real and that I'm taking it down because I regret it. But I just left it up. And I did see an increase in traffic and an increase in subscribers. Not massive, though. Not as good as when I put out a sincere short with good information that does well. I do way better off those. So what I would say is it was fun. I would absolutely do it again. I wouldn't make a steady habit of it because, again, I think it really could eclipse the hard work that I've done.
Sounds like it would tarnish the brand of what you you are.
I think doing it too much could and would do that.
Yeah.
But I will play around with it a little more. I think what I learned was that I took it a little too far and kept a straight face too long. There's somebody said a comment where they were like, Poe's Law, dude, Poe's Law. And I had to look it up to learn this one. But it's basically, unless obviously satirical, people will mistake it as true.
Right. It was a little too serious.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Like I kept a straight face to the very end.
I got it, but I was also with you talking about it ahead of time. I was primed for it. So.
Explained it. So I think what I experienced was people believing it's real because I played it up too well.
Just to close this off a bit, I want to come back to this simple concept, which is what you've done is absolutely incredible. You've done it without a crew. You've done it in your own endeavors. You've done it over 7 years. You've done it in the contracting space, and you've done it in drywall, which is a very specific niche thing. For all those listening, the landscapers, the painters, the renovators, the roofers, the contractors, any advice for people who are thinking of doing this for just to help their business, to help their brand, to get recognition from customers, to be out there a bit more?
I think it's really good. I think that's actually the way you should go into it, is you should think about it propping up your existing business. Mm-hmm. Being that Vancouver's so busy, I actually didn't want it to increase my business because I'm already too busy. But if you want to grow your contracting business, I think that's the first thing that you should look at when creating content. And if it starts to do well, if it starts to, you know, grow legs like mine did, right, and kind of take off on its own, that's when I think you should really put some more time into it.
Right.
But I look at a lot of, I would say YouTube, while it is a bit saturated, there's actually money to be made. Instagram is not bad for getting eyeballs, but you don't make money off Instagram unless you're doing brand deals. Uh-huh. And you have to get pretty big to get that going. So don't ignore Instagram. But I see a lot of people where I feel like they've only focused on Instagram. And I kind of wonder what they actually do at work all day. Like, do they just, it seems like so much work because Instagram stuff is so like over edited and it's got music and all this. And I look at it, I'm just like, man, are you actually working or are you just like thinking about your Instagram post? They're obviously getting work done, but I just feel like that would be so stressful to like be trying to stir up that much creative juices all day. Like I film maybe 10% or probably far less, probably 5% of what I actually do.
Right.
Because filming and doing that really slows down the work.
Yeah.
So if the work is your primary focus, then creating content all the time is, it's not beneficial. So some is good, but too much. Like on my last job or on this one that I just filmed, I feel like we did a really good job of filming stuff, but the production, it was like too much. And so I need to be like, okay, how can we scale this down and make it a little more efficient? Because, you know, lighting up and bringing this much stuff onto every job is like, it'd be hard for the homeowners. It'll freak them out.
Yeah.
Walking in with a camera on a thing and just filming some stuff with a basic light, no problem. But like lighting the job up like a production, it's like too much.
I've learned a lot just watching Matt Reisinger, but it is two different businesses actually.
Yep.
The way he's got it operating is he's got his construction business being run actually by someone on his team, and then he's got his actual like brand kind of influencer business.
He seems like a master delegator.
He's very good at it.
Yeah. And, well, and people who are good in contracting, that's them.
Yeah.
I will never claim to be a good tradesman. I'm a good tradesman. I will never claim to be a good contractor.
From what I can tell, you're a good creator. You both in your craft and in YouTube, you like to create. You have a very inventive mind.
Yeah.
And that's what's taking you, I think, so far, is you've had the ability to see opportunity in very narrow things that most people wouldn't have the creativity to do.
And that does require, like I was saying, a little bit of time. When you're so stressed out all the time, that stuff doesn't come to you. You'll keep going for the low-hanging fruit, but you don't get the opportunity to really come up with new ideas.
You ever heard the term high in emotion, low in intelligence? You heard that before?
Yeah, but I would need to see it applied to something to understand how it's being used.
It's in business all the time. It's like when you're maxed and you're stressed and you're pissed and your ability to problem solve yourself through that is very low. And usually you'll make these short-term rash decisions that actually really screw stuff up more for the future because all you're thinking about is survival and you're, you know.
Yeah, like not ripping out all the plaster.
Yeah, just but like, and it's very true. So like one thing is in business that I've always learned and taught with all of our members is just kind of like when you're high in emotion, you need to recognize it because you're low in intelligence. You're not in a place to make big decisions right now. You need to slow down.
Yeah, and it's not a critique on someone's actual intelligence. It just means like you're not accessing that part of your brain that's going to make the right decisions.
Correct. It's just a part of how our brains work.
Yep.
So anyway, cool. Ben, this was awesome. This was fun. So you've given us some tips. You've given us some ideas. I think for anyone listening, they don't need to go become Ben and create 700,000 subscribers. It's more of a simple tips, how-tos to be able to go out there and be able to, I guess, bring value to your already existing audience or your customer base and then see where it goes from there and try not to overbake it because it is a lot of work when you really lean in.
That ultimately, that's what it is don't think about what you're going to gain from it. Think about what you have to share with people. Right. If you actually have useful things and you could share it, well, please do. Like the world needs that. We need more people doing things for the benefit of others. Like, hey, this is good information and I think it'll help people. Just know that 50% of people are going to tell you they think it's stupid.
Which is fine.
You're welcome to put yourself
out on the public.
Yeah. That's the comments. That's the price to pay.
I will ask you that actually. How do you overcome that? Because I imagine that might be someone's biggest objection.
Well, I feel like there's always been enough momentum and it's grown enough that I've been able to see, okay, this is the minority speaking when I get really negative comments, except when they can't figure out that it's fake.
You did that to yourself, Ben.
Yeah. I can own that. I accept it. But I would say start with what do I have that's going to help other people? Because if you're starting with how can I make this thing that's going to help me, and I know that sounds a little bit ironic when I said that I started the channels because I needed to help or to bring in more income to support my family. But I've, through the whole process, I've always thought, is this valuable for the viewer? And I never try and put out anything that I think is wasting their time, insulting their intelligence, or just not useful, which is partly why I haven't gone into vlog stuff very much because I can't figure out there's not enough useful stuff in it to keep the audience that I've managed to gather interested.
Well said. And that's true in business, man. Like when we go and run a business, we all need to support our families. We all have to have a backbone that provides profit and revenue for the company. But it's not, doesn't need to be the driving force that creates new ideas and drives the business forward and how we make decisions every single day. And when we're trying to just bring value to the world, I think that is the best version of an organization. And I think in small business, you see it a lot more and it's a lot more common than as businesses get massive, right? So you've had that luxury and I totally get what you're doing. It's, hey, I got to provide for my family, but at the same time, my ideas, the things I think about on a Tuesday to come out with next Friday are about what's actually valuable to my audience.
Yeah. And I think there is also something to be said for, especially in the trades related videos, there's something to be said for, you know, keeping the craft alive and advancing the craft.
Right.
Because there really is. I mean, we all complain about poor construction, poor building. There's something to be said for helping us move forward in that field as well.
Yeah, we need to professionalize this industry and we need to teach the craft because it's probably not everyone's teaching it properly.
No.
No. Cool, Ben. Thanks for coming up.
Thank you.
Oh, one of these. Boom. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Talk to you later. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it. Hey, Danny here. Build Show Live is going to be in Dallas October 16th, 18th, and is hands down the best trade show for builders, remodelers, and contractors. Me and my team are going to be there live, and I'd love to meet you. So you can join us with 25% off your tickets using code BTA25. Don't miss it.